reason why San Diego is doing so well, why we're getting so many tops that are becoming popular, is because we have a larger supportive structure. As I've said before, when Mr. San Diego Leather went to Mid-Atlantic Leather back around the turn of the year, he had a group of title holders come up to him and say, we need to talk to you. He said, what do you need? They said, you need to cut it out. They said, you're making the rest of us look bad. And he didn't know what the hell to think about that. And so then he talked to me about it immediately, called me. And I said, if they had the support structure that you have, they wouldn't be saying that. The problem is that they're trying to do it all on their own, and it's heartbreaking to do that. Versus you've got thousands of people acting as the wind beneath your wings, so you're serene, you're sailing, you're happy. And everyone deserves that. And that's why I'm trying to teach these other cities to do this. I have not made this plain yet, but I'm going to be writing a book about it before too much longer. It's time. I've got the material. It's time to put it out there. But anyway, so getting back to the whole popularity thing. Okay, this question is just for the tops in the room. During the time that you've been hanging out with our group, raise your hand if you've become much more popular. Yeah. Yeah. If you've become more popular as a top in this town by being around us. Jay. I know, I get that. But I'm just saying that that actually illustrates my point, because a lot of the reason why people don't like the attention is because they've never been trained to deal with it. That's what tonight is about, is how to deal with becoming popular. I get this question constantly. People who will, I mean, okay, Scott, why don't you tell us what you told me? Okay.
Can you frame that for me, son?
All right. You said after 43 years, suddenly everybody wants to know me and I'm popular. Am I wrong? No. Well, how did you phrase it?
As a result of being in the group and hanging out with y'all, I realized that after 40 some years, find myself lacking in dealing with the attention and mainly with the attention and the affection that I'm getting from guys, because you know when I was in my 20s and 30s that was not the case, actively shunned, and now that people are coming up to me, I don't know how to deal with this. And so it's a little intimidating. It's a whole bunch at once, and I don't want to be a dick. And these are nice people, so I asked for coaching and for some guidance on how to deal with the popularity that somehow magically after 45 years I finally got.
Very good. Well, Ron, our Ron, who won the gear contest just before the movie, said that he. Since he won that gear contest, he has received 53 hubba hubba messages on Facebook. Okay. Well, clearly, yes, he's a man who has some spare time, but not a lot of spare time. Somebody who's visible, somebody who everybody already likes, they're all going to be dropping their handkerchiefs and dropping their soap around him. So how do we deal with that? I'm glad you like that. It's one of my own. You're welcome to use it. Anyways, this is a standard talk that I've been using for decades. And I promise you this is useful stuff. Because the temptation for a top is, when you get lots and lots of attention, is that you worry that you're going to come across as a dick, or that people are going to see you as a capital A attitude queen, or that you're going to, you know, think that, you know, you're better than anybody else or anything like that. So we try to stay centered, but sometimes it's hard. Okay? Sometimes it's difficult. I'll give a good example of attitude queen, where someone comes up to a handsome stranger, finds him very attractive in a bar, and tries to initiate contact with them. And at that point, the top says, yeah, right, like I'd have anything to do with you. Get the fuck away from me. Okay, clearly, within 5 minutes, no one in that bar will talk to that guy because the spurn guy will tell everybody else and it'll spread like wildfire and everybody will go to the other side of the bar. Okay? Because it says more about him than about anybody else. And that's how a culture works. But how does one avoid getting to that place? You know, I mean, you're basically a decent, nice guy. Everybody likes to think that they're on the side of the angels. Everybody likes to think that they're, you know, a sassy top, a desirable top, a easily accessible top. Well, it's not always the case because people tend to use defense mechanisms very non-consciously. They'll throw shade. And they'll say, nobody will talk to me. I wonder what the hell's going on. Not realizing that the look on their face is making people say, I'll deal with that later. It's a self-protective mechanism. Okay. So I'll give a good example of what happened with me about probably 30 years ago. I went into Wolf's, and it was a very busy night, typical for Wolf's, a very popular bar. And I could tell that there was a guy that was stalking me. I wasn't in the mood to play with anybody that night, and frankly, he wasn't my style. But I could tell he was stalking me, that wherever I went, he was, you know, furtively, you know, kind of staring at me and trying to figure out how to approach me, and I thought, oh boy. So then I went into the restroom, and I came out, and he clamped onto my arm and started talking real fast. Hi, I'm into this, and this is my name, and he went on and on and on, and so then I just stopped, and I just waited. I just was present with him because it was clearly something that was very important to him, and it wasn't so important to me, but I was going to meet him halfway. And when he finally wound down, I held out my hand to him for a handshake, so he had to let go of my arm. And so then I said, you know, I'm very flattered, and I appreciate it. Thank you. I'm very glad that, you know, you've made a big difference in my evening tonight. And what you need to know is that I'm not really looking to play with anybody tonight. I'm actually on my way home to go cuddle with my husband. But I really do appreciate the, you know, the compliment. So thank you. Can I have a hug? Okay. That was an example of what I'm talking about tonight. Let me explain the mechanism underneath it. People think in a cruising situation that what they're looking for is sex. No doubt they got blue balls and that's a big motivator. But what I assert is that far more important than that is what they're looking for is acknowledgement. They want to know that this object of extreme desire to them doesn't see them as an offensive troll or as something to be kicked to the curb or that's stuck to their shoe. They want to know that they have worth. They want to know that they're okay. And if we grant everyone around us our esteem, if we can find the majesty in anybody, with one exception, okay, and I'll talk more about that in a moment, but if we can find some reason to like that person's going to wag their tail. They're going to tell their friends, that's a really nice guy. And that helps. It really does, because people will respect your space. They really will if they know that you're not really looking for stuff right now. No, situations change. So what is the one exception? The one exception is if somebody is drunk or tweaked out on something, then the rules are different. Speaking for myself, I don't have a lot of patience for that. Someone is real sloppy drunk, I'm not going to play with them no matter how attractive they are. Because I prefer people who are on the same level as me, where I can connect, dink, 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 on the same level, rather than, you know, try to get their attention periodically just so that they're still present with me. I'm not going to do that. I'm picky that way. But if I mean, you guys have seen me in action. I'm sure you have. I'm a popular guy. I'm a very visible top, okay? I get a lot of people, you know, applying for the position of being my boy, my butt boy, my slave, my whatever. And I've had to find ways to be able to love people just the way they are and to let them know that that's not what I'm shopping for right now. But the way that I do it is always to trust them. See, that's where the big breakdown is. People have self-defense mechanisms up. They have history of people who have harmed them, people who have fucked them over, people who are trying to use them for various purposes. What I assert is that, in my life at least, I don't get a lot of that. I don't get a lot of people trying to do those things to me. Maybe it's because I'm huge. Who knows? But I'm going to give a really good example. Again, with the parables. I used to have a wonderful blessing in my life. I used to go up once a month up to North County, San Diego, up to old Highway 395, where they have all of the avocado and macadamia ranches back then. This was 35 years ago. And most of those avocado and macadamia ranches were owned by elderly gay male couples. They'd been together 53 years, 47 years, 42 years. And I'd go to these pool parties with my husband at the time. He was like 22 years older than me. And I'd be the youngest person. He'd be the youngest person there except for me, by far. Well, I didn't know how to deal with the situation. I'd had no prior experience of being around a bunch of, you know, fun old guys. I saw them as a bunch of hideous old trolls and that they were just too goddamn grabby. And I saw it as a hostile thing, and I didn't like it, and I got more and more pissy about it. And everybody'd be in the pool, and I'd be the only one wearing a bathing suit, and they'd gather around me and try and jolly me into taking my shorts off. And I'd just go, ah, goddammit, and I'd jump out of the pool, and I'd run into the bathroom. And so Clark, the host of the party, comes and taps on the door. Can I come in? Yeah. So he comes in, and we talk. He says, you realize that you're being a real dick. I said, really? He says, yeah. Everybody's just trying to jolly you up. You're the only one who's not having any fun, and they don't want to try and have forced sex on you. They just want you to lighten up. They're trying to get you to be a little sweeter. Oh. I came out. It turns out that was the case. They weren't trying to, like, fuck me to the ground. They just wanted me to be more fun. And they wanted to be my loving uncles. And for a long time after that, they were my loving uncles. It all has to do with how we see them. See, there's a difference between looking and seeing. If I look at them, I see a bunch of hideous old trolls that, you know, are too grabby. But when I really see them, they're all loving uncles that wanted me to succeed. They wanted me to thrive. And it all has to do with how we choose to see people. I choose every day to be idealistic, to be optimistic, to not be cynical. Because I've got as many reasons as anybody else to be cynical, to be defensive. The thing about cynicism is it protects our tender hearts like a hard shell, but it also prevents us from noticing when the real thing shows up. When a potential friend or lover or someone who could be a real breakthrough in your life can show up. So I choose to drop the shields often. Because the problem with the shields, again, is it's a lonely place inside the fortress. And if we choose to just open up, and that's what I do. And I think you guys know pretty well. I'm a hyper extrovert, so yeah, that's a big consideration. But you know, what this whole purpose of this group is to create a safe space where no matter how introverted you are, you have a safe space every time you show up. You know, I'm always asking the rhetorical question. You know, if you've been to our events, how many times have people treated you shabbily? Everybody goes, never, of course. Well, it's not always that way. You can go to other cities, and it ain't the story that you'll find in other places. You can go into San Diego's history, and it wasn't always the story. But the purpose of this is to create a tribe where we have that fallback and people catch you trust exercise, because it's our birthright as humans. But as gay men, we lost that. So we have to be defensive. We have to bring our clique with us in order to have a good time. That does get back to the main point, I promise. But the problem with the clique, as I've said before, is it's a hard shell. We bring our friends into a public occasion because we don't trust the people around us. And nobody has even the slightest chance of getting in unless one of us finds them particularly attractive. And everyone else bounces off of our indifference. We don't have a lot of cliques left in San Diego. We really don't. You might notice that. Instead, everything swarms, just like in that picture I was passing around. To me, that's the future. I cannot perfect every social interaction that you guys are going to have. But the reason why I created this series of safe spaces the way that I have is specifically so that people can drop the shields and be rewarded for it. so that you can actually find people who actually are fun playmates because you already know the dark stuff about them already. Okay. If I am in a public situation, okay, like for instance, I get creeped out. This is my weakness. I get creeped out by the online world, the online cruising world. You guys have heard me bitch about it, so I'll do it again for the audio. I signed on to Recon, and I made the mistake of answering the questionnaire accurately. And I just got swarmed with hundreds of hubba hubba messages within 24 hours. You know, from Uruguay, and Germany, you know the story. And I don't know what to do with that because I'm intuitive. I like to be able to get a sense of who somebody is. I would like to watch their body language, and when somebody's just sending me JPEGs from, Lithuania, it's hard to build some kind of trust with that person. So it just creeps me out. That's my weakness. That's my flaw. The problem with the internet, as I say all the time, is that it's making us, if we live there too much, it makes us socially retarded. What I'm doing actually tonight, in this roundabout way that I am, is I'm helping people gain maybe a few social graces. I'm aiming it specifically at tops, but honestly, this is pretty darn good for any gay men who are looking to connect with someone in a social circumstance. That they may not necessarily be somebody that you wish to have sexual intercourse up to and including orgasm with, but it doesn't mean that they lack value. What it doesn't mean is that they can't be a friend that adds great value in your life, that they can't be somebody who at least is good for a darn good hug that really means something to you periodically. If I treat you guys as someone with worth, you tend to rise to that occasion. This is part of the lesson. Pretend I'm a different guy. Pretend I'm a big bully. And I'm going through a crowd and I'm in a shitty mood. And I'm shoving people out of the way. Get the fuck out of my way, asshole. I'm going to get asshole back. But if instead I assume that the person that I'm dealing with is a good person that has value, then what happens is that it transforms the interaction. I'm taking responsibility for how this goes. What I did in the circumstance over at Wolf's that I was talking about is I took responsibility for how the discussion went. He started with the clamping and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I could have shook him off and punched him or whatever the hell, but I chose not to. What I chose instead is to speak in simple to declarative statements where I said, thank you, I am flattered, and, notice the word and, this is part of it. I didn't say, I really like you, but, because we know perfectly well you may as well snip off the first part of the sentence because then the truth comes. But if I say, I am very flattered, and you should know that I actually am not here to pick somebody up tonight, it doesn't make it a punch in the face in any way. I'm letting him know that he's okay with me, that he's worth a good hug. And it's just, this is what I do on an almost daily basis. And the reason why I do this is because people are a lot happier when, in my particular case, wherever I go, I tend to not just stand out because of the height or because of the reputation or whatever. I carry myself in such a way as I call myself a traffic cop. Okay? When I'm describing how this group goes, we tend to attract two types of people, Boy Scouts and traffic cops. Okay. Boy Scouts, virtuous people, big hearts. There's a bunch of them in this room. Trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, not so clean, but reverent. Traffic cops are people who, by their nature, take full responsibility for the safety and well-being of the space, even though they're not conscious of it most of the time. By nature, they're keeping an eye on things. If something goes wrong, something goes off the tracks, they're the first ones to say, here, let me handle that. They can't not do it. Okay. The reason why I bring this up is because if someone is that way, and if they're conscious about it, and they're really good at it, they've really started, exploring how good they are at it, it settles an entire community down. That's why nothing goes wrong at our events, because we attract a lot of very responsible people. Responsibility is not a burden. It's not a gun to the head. It's not an obligation. People who are by nature responsible are a huge blessing on any community. And luckily enough, we attract a lot of them. Have I spoken to you guys in previous talks about elephants in India? Okay. It's a good metaphor. In India, for thousands of years, they've been using elephants as live bulldozers, you know, moving trees and whatever, transportation. Every once in a while, they need to go out and get some new material, some new elephants. So they go out into the jungle, and they build a big stockade, and then they stampede the wild elephants into the stockade, and then they slam the gate shut. The elephants freak out. They're panicking. They're jabbing each other with their tusks. It's just a big mess. What they learned a long, long time ago is if you take some tame elephants, some well-socialized elephants, and put them in there first, the other elephants say, well, they're not upset. I guess I can calm down now. And what I assert is that that is why we have so little going wrong at our events. Because someone who carries himself like a security guard, not as in like this, but as in just keeping an eye on things, subconsciously, we human beings, you know, us pack apes, we notice this and we calm down. A lot of these guys are tops. A lot of them are extroverts. Okay. Someone who is visible as being a man of the tribe, someone who is visible, becomes very desirable. See, I'm saying this specifically for the benefit of several of the men in this room specifically, and you know who I'm talking to, is that they, by nature, are the ones that everyone looks to. They know that they're dependable. Well, the problem is, again, it makes you very, very, very popular. Now, that's a weird problem to have, but it's a good one. What I have to do with the guys that I'm training, in case you're not aware of this, but I coach tops on a constant and daily basis. Again, the reason why is because we need to improve the ratio of tops to bottoms in this town. That there may be a bunch of them, but they haven't really taken ownership of it yet. They're shy, they're unsure. They don't want to admit that they're shy and unsure. But it's a big burden for tops to always be expected to know. I met a new one last night at our event, and he was damned if he was going to admit that he didn't know. But when I kind of gently, lovingly coaxed it out of him, then he admitted that there was the stuff that he thought that he should know, he knew almost nothing about. It's very difficult for us that we're expected to be the one, you know, on top of things. But who the hell is training? Well, I am. So I'm going to pause for a moment. I've been doing an awful lot of rambling, and I apologize. I'm not at my best tonight. But anybody have any thoughts, any questions, any observations so far? Let's leave that open. Ken, do you have any thoughts?
It's apropos topic for me.
Okay, tell us why.
So last week was my first... my first meeting, and as I've shared with Tony, I've had fetish interest since I was a very little kid, and have explored those as an adult. But this is probably the first time in my life where I'm embracing that in a public way, and it's a little bit frightening. In a lot of respects, because of relationships that I have in the community and that kind of thing, and just fearful of the, you know, any taboo or, you know, kind of social stigma that may or may not come with the, you know, interest that a lot of us share in this room. But it's definitely good awareness and, you know, presence of mind to have as I step into that and explore that and embrace publicly that part of who I am that has been so long. It's like I'm almost coming out of the closet again.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the secondary closet, if you will.
Yeah, and we've all gone through that.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like I came out of the closet 6 years ago, and now I'm coming out of that internal, but... secondary closet, I guess.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. And I remember when that occurred to me, this was God, I think 38 years ago, 39 years ago, I had a boyfriend that was constantly trying to provoke me. Constantly trying to provoke me. I had only come out just a little while earlier, and he was one of my first boyfriends, and he was just a real dick. And I said, fuck it. I grabbed him, I threw him over my lap, and I started spanking him, and we both got a hard on. I went, whoa. I've already got one thing on my plate. I don't need two of them right now. But, yeah. So, you know, it is the reason why it would even have to be a second coming out at all is because we've been lied to our whole lives about this whole kink thing. There's constant articles all the time now. There was one that I'm going to be putting in the newsletter that says they're finding that folks who engage in kink are actually more emotionally healthy than vanilla people. I'll be passing that one around a lot. But see, I don't know if you guys knew this or not, but I've raised 6 foster kids. You know, generally young teenage males in crisis. One of the first lessons I have to teach them is that I teach them how to be innocent again, because they've got cynicism like you would not fucking believe by the time they're teenagers in the foster care system. But one of the first things that when they say, well, how? And I said, the first thing we do is we get you a better set of friends. Because being around people who are not to your advantage is a very bad thing, and you know, we got to get away from that. So the people who are going to judge you for being fully self-expressed are not really people that really want to know you. And so what we're doing right now is we're helping you find a whole bunch of new friends that love you just the way you are. Yeah, in fact, you're going to be a lot more popular than you've ever been before. Like, he came to the play party, hands-on demo. What was that experience for you like at the hands-on demo? What changed in your life? Go ahead.
So, like, walking into it, I was incredibly anxious. Mm-hmm. I'd never been to that type of environment before. As we were driving down there, you had talked about that you typically don't go unless you have a boy, well, especially to, like, a mixed-gender one, but unless you have a boy that is yours, you know, to have that kind of safety net or whatever. So, like, walking into it, going there solo, I was pretty anxious, you know, though I had friends that were there. And as I, you know, started to explore and, you know, allow you to kind of show me some things, like, I started to find my space, and then I had the first opportunity to kind of express myself in the way that, you know, that I like to when it comes to, you know, impact play. Mm-hmm. And there was somebody that was open to me spanking them, and mm-hmm. I did, and it drew some attention.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of attention would you say it drew?
I think there was a piqued interest. It was a curiosity, a playful curiosity.
People are impressed, frankly, but go ahead.
And then after I had finished with this one boy, then another one came up and said, will you do that to me as well? Mm-hmm. And so it was like, it was a validation that I had never experienced in my life before, mm-hmm. just especially because of the, you know, taboo that I've always experienced because of my fetish interests or whatever. And, it was nice to be noticed for something that I enjoy, and that through, you know, finding my pleasure, they found pleasure in it as well. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely unexpected. Mm-hmm. Definitely unexpected.
Yeah, he was walking 4 feet off the ground. And see, that's, again, what, I mean, since then, have you found that people want to fill up your dance card really quickly?
I've gotten a couple of messages here and there.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was very missed.
Yeah.
I woke up to a text message on Monday morning saying that I had been much talked about over the weekend.
Yeah. So you were topic A. Yeah. Your picture's been flying around. And the reason why is because the way that we're structured as a culture here locally is that when the real thing shows up, people want to know. When someone who, I mean, the reason why everyone was so impressed with him is that, how long you've been doing kinky stuff directly?
A couple of years, I guess.
Right. But the people who were present saw him show beautiful style. I mean, I was impressed, and I've been around a long fucking time. His style, I can't even repeat it. I want to learn how he does spanking. I mean, that looks like something I could really, really use, that style. And it's your own natural style, and it's smooth, it flows, it's beautiful, and I've never seen it like that before. And like I said, I've seen a lot of spanking in my day. So every head in the building just went, boom, and turned towards him. And then people were talking to me and saying, oh, wow. You know, I'd say, well, don't tell me, tell him. Like I keep saying, it takes a village to raise a top. That how's he going to know? It seriously does. How's he going to know how big and strong his wings are if we don't give him the feedback so that he knows? And that's what I'm constantly encouraging. The reason why is because, as, like, for instance, like I said with Ron, Ron showed up, and I don't think he'd mind my saying this, just like most of the guys in this room, you show up for the first time, and frankly, we're damaged. It's okay. It's an odd thing to say. But a lot of us have been through the flames. We've been through a shitload. And to be able to come and just leave your burden by the side of the road with us, to share it and then be done with it. Ron, just like so many of us, had his burdens. But he is accelerating like crazy. He is not just becoming popular because, hey, you know, stud, but as in, he's an admirable, respectable, lovable man. He's starting to test out his capabilities. Well, he would never have the freedom to do that if he didn't have the rest of us there to make sure that he had the support. And since we're not a crotch club, you know, you can get laid anywhere. You know, I think we all know where to find it. But since we're a mutual support society, then it's a lot easier for him to find himself and to find his center and to find out just how powerful he always was born to be, which is what he's doing now. When I told him, he was talking about an opinion piece that he had put on Facebook, and he sent me a copy. And my comment to him is, I said, you are becoming the patriarch of the community that you always were born to be, and you're just now really owning it. Keep experimenting, keep trying stuff. You'll find your voice. I mean, whether I agreed with him or not, had nothing to do with it. That we need strong opinions. They don't have to agree with me. That's not the cost of my support. But the reason why I bring all this stuff up is because, again, we're talking around and around the exact same thing. Outside of a supportive culture, it's the law of the jungle. Within the supportive culture, what you see is what's happening in this room. We like each other. We trust each other. We're a lot less... Wait a second, what did you mean by that? I call it the fighting lobster stance. Wait a second, what was that? You know, we don't get triggered. otherwise known as the G.I. Joe Kung Fu grip, okay? So I've been talking quite a bit. I'm still waiting for more questions, more comments. What are your observations about any of this stuff? Please.
I guess you can say that I was pretty naive when I first started to come to the group about a month ago. Ian invited me after meeting him on the bus when we all went to Long Beach. And from there, I've always been a little bit more quiet and a little bit more shy and a little bit more to myself. But once coming to the group and getting involved, I've met some great friends and great people, and then obviously going to Harness Night and everything has opened my eyes to stuff that I've always wanted to do but I've always been afraid to do because of that taboo and everyone saying it's not right and, you know, kind of painted that picture for you. And so obviously it's been tainted for me as I grew up, and even though that I've wanted to explore, it's now given me the chance to do what I've always wanted to do. Mm-hmm.
So have you had chances to really, you know, just rock out and have some fun with it?
Yeah, some.
Okay. Well, we expect web links before much longer, yeah. Yeah, that's wonderful. Because again, you know, I say this all the time, but what I assert is a kink and fetish is just extreme intimacy and always has been. We've been treated shabbily. We've been treated scornfully. We've been treated sinfully. We've been treated all the rest of these things. And it's just all bullshit. And it always was. The reason why they're having these studies on our mental health and our emotional health and our balance and our centeredness and all that other stuff is because finally the truth is coming out. But the same thing that could have had you lobotomized in the 60s is actually something that makes us healthier. It's about time we had that information coming to us. Because what we have here, I mean, just as a quick aside, this is not directly on topic, but it's something I'm going to comment about. The people in the theater, who we were heavily intermixed with, they had no idea. A lot of them had no idea that we existed. They're very aware of it now. Because what they saw, in a subconscious way, is the fact that we like each other, that we get along well, that we flow together, that we're what I call the culture of okie-dokie. That's a weird thing to say, but it's a very Tony thing to say. I've written about this. The reason why I'm so pleased with that picture that shows everything just in every direction is because we're still unified. We're still on the same wavelength. Is because the reason why I said it was going to be a hot mess long before it, and it was, and I like it that way, because all I have to do is say, everybody, this is what we're going to do. And everybody, okie dokie, and they do it. Because we have a basis for trust. Because we've got people like our Ian. Nobody fought him. Nobody argued with him. Nobody was hissing and spitting in factions because they trust the results that he brings. They know what he's dedicated to. They absolutely can depend upon Ian's brand. Just like with all the rest of the people, such as Aaron, who is hosting the Cigars and Boots event. Each one of these events that we had, again, are all on the same basis for relax. Just be present. Just be happy. It always turns out okay. When I first started this group, I'm going to wind down. The break's coming. But when I first started this group, I created the website, the first webpage. It says there's only one rule for our events. You can be as nice as you want to be, and it'll always turn out fine. I promise. And that's what I based this group upon. And what happened is we're attracting what I call gentlemen. That's why it becomes a lot easier for somebody, bringing it on back home, that's why it becomes a lot easier for somebody who rises in public esteem to suddenly be very, very distracted with lots of people handing in applications. That's okay. So what I'm going to do is... I'm actually going to take it to our Brian over here. What are your thoughts about all this? Any observations, any questions, anything like that? What have you seen, you know, as far as what I'm talking about, as far as do people treat you more courteously when you approach them here?
Yeah, it's a great group of perv and kinky guys, and they're gentlemen as well. But it's nice to be on the same wavelength, and we all, I think, want the camaraderie and to share our feelings and also, you know, our true feelings and not be that we're so much different than the straight or the, what they say, the normal, you know, our little kinks are, you know, we could be open and honest about it. And I think that's what it just makes me more aware of that we are a community of people that share some of the same interests.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. The intention that I had behind creating not just this, but, you know, the larger structure, is to bring back what I had when I was young, which was a large support system. People who gave a damn about each other, whether we live or die, whether we succeed, who give a damn about making sure that we all succeed so that we all thrive. We used to do that all the time, and then it all broke down. And everybody started dying, and then the internet came along and vaporized us as a community. If somebody's on Adam for Adam, they have no actual connection with someone who's on Bareback RT versus, you know, Daddy Hunt versus millions of others. None of those money-making systems support local community. There's no money in it. Why would they bother? Why would they hire somebody to make sure that everybody in San Diego knows about San Diego events? So it just got worse. And the reason why I created this group specifically is to go in the other direction, where we bring it back to where we were. I'm not trying to turn it old guard. I don't know if you guys knew this or not, but all the old guard clubs are dying. Avatar just suspended, up in LA, just suspended events. They don't know what to do. SDLOG here in town, you notice we don't have any more announcements for them. They've stopped. It's okay. I created that group based on the way that I wanted to be more like the old guard groups, but they're failing because they're past-oriented. The reason why we're doing well is we are forward-oriented. Yes?
Can I speak to that a little bit?
Please.
When I first came out 6 years ago, the nature of the social group that I was coming out with was very much, a little bit more the popular Hillcrest kind of crowd, what have you.
A-list.
And I still have a lot of very good friends that are in that community. I feel like I have opportunity to interact in those circles and not, even though I don't fit in that crowd in much of any respect, I have access and am welcome in there, but I don't feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I remember the first time that I went to PEX, just because it's local and, you know, what have you. One of the things that I really appreciated about the atmosphere of PEX was that there was no attitude. Whereas when I would go to, you know, any number of bars in Hillcrest proper, there were those cliques that you talked about. And I would disagree with you a little bit in the respect that I feel like there are still cliques in San Diego. I think
I'm talking about within our group.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think those exist in this community.
Yeah.
Which I'm grateful for. And I think that was at least one thing for me that, like, as I started to go to PEX and, as I learned about, Bear Night, which was kind of my, like, entry into, like, finding out about the, this community in San Diego, there was no attitude. There was that welcoming, there was that sense of, you can be who you are and you're welcome in this community, whether you, identify as a bear or a cub or an otter or a wolf or any number of the animal kingdom.
Speaking for myself, I'm a moose. I'm tall, long-legged, and very horny.
But I feel like for me, that was my welcome into, look, there is a community that is non-cliquish. There is a community that is open and just very casual and comfortable. And it was very comforting for somebody that is like, okay, so I get this, and yeah, I can function in this world, but there's aspects of that, the attitude and the privilege and the whatever, that I'm just like,
entitlement.
It's not comfortable for me.
Yeah.
And so to kind of then find this community was hugely refreshing. And I think a lot of it has to do with the attitude that you're speaking about tonight.
Yeah. When I was young, I was a very pretty guy, very attractive. I was going to the gym 6 times a week because I wanted to be popular. All of a sudden, I'm popular. I want to be popular. So I was working out a lot. I would use Sun-In on my hair to make it blonde. I've got pictures with me. And I was very attractive, and I was hanging out with a lot of kinky old leather men who really liked the fact that I liked to fuck older guys. So my dance card was very full, okay? The problem was is that it was like walking a tightrope of approval, that if I stepped off of what they wanted me to be, like if I wanted to, like, say, wear Hawaiian shirt and shorts and flip-flops, they'd say, no. We like you in leather. We want to see you in leather. I was basically a mobile dildo for them. So after a while, I just said, okay, I'm done. This is just too shallow for me. I can't do it anymore. Thanks for all the fun. It was really fun, but you'll notice I don't spend a lot of energy on trying to create an elite subgroup within this group. I have no time for that. I can't imagine a single good reason for doing that, for having the extra special guys. It's like one of the things that I commented about during the dinner the other night in my talk. I said, I invented leather pride. The very first leather pride on earth happened in San Diego, and now it's spread all over the world. And I said, the last thing I want is to keep on doing what everybody else is doing with it now, which is to have the $99 package you have to buy before the weekend, And to have the elite events that are just for people who can afford the expensive cost of getting in and who are wearing $3,000 worth of leather and they're chinking, you know, champagne glasses and feeling elite while the new and the shy people are completely ignored in their midst. And I'd be the only one talking to them. And I can make a real strong case for them being horrible people for doing that, but they're not horrible people. The problem is, like all of us, they're shy. People who do that, who wear $3,000 worth of langlets, a lot of the time it is a distancing mechanism. So if I go through, I mean, every year I go to an event that is heavily populated with those people, and I'll go up to them, they'll be perfectly kind and perfectly courteous, but then I'll say, why don't you come on over and hang out with me and my friends? Oh no, I'll just stand here. One guy here, one guy over there, one guy there, one guy there. And they're so afraid of anything changing in their life that they're just saying, I'm going to maintain this. And I feel sorry for them. I feel sad. You know, I want to say, come on, you have a place in the world that is not what you think it is. What I always tell them is, you know, I say, be a loving uncle. That is your birthright. We need more loving uncles. Quit pretending you're 23 and fit, because you're not. Quit pretending that it's still 1982 or 1976 or 2001 or whatever, because the world that we have now looks like this. And it's not a threat, and it's not a problem. It's actually vibrant. It's nourishing. It's vitamin-packed, because everybody here has been contributing in their own way. I mean, I could go down the list in all the ways that all of you people have been contributing. How the changes that you've gone through since you started hanging out with us have enriched us all. And that the more we welcome the new and the shy and the uncertain and the, you know, all the rest of that, then the more we see blossoming. I'm rambling like crazy, I know I am, and I tend to do that. But I want you guys to really understand that what is in that picture that I was passing around, what is in this room, it doesn't get any better than you guys. I want you to really take ownership of that. That the reason why I'm giving this talk to you guys is because I love you guys. This is important. These are things that I really want you guys to get to the next level on, because what is happening all around us, I call it blossoming forth, where somebody is at a stopped point in their life and suddenly they break through. And we're doing that a lot in this room. Yes, we're doing that a lot in this room. You know, I could do that with a bunch of people, that we've all been going through a lot of wonderful changes because we have this support system, because we share.